Good morning. I'm glad it's all friends here today. Right, this is what we're not talking about this morning. How to be comfy. I've read it. It taught me nothing new. Just to get you up with the children's story, I don't know if you got anything much out of it besides delight, but that counts too. If there had been kids here, we might have talked about what would it like to be going on a bear hunt alone by yourself, doing all those things. Is it better with other people? Why is that? Maybe because we can look after each other and it's more fun. You might have noticed people helping each other. You might have noticed that the dad wasn't enjoying the yucky things any more than the kids was. Kids were. And it's also about some things that you just have to go through. There's no way around them. It's a fabulous story. It's got so much in it. So take what you will from that. And the song we just sang, just to be really obvious, there's a lot of big, bangy, thundery news at the moment. But perhaps the news is a bit closer. So we're looking at how we respond to the news this morning. I hope this will be a time of encouragement. I didn't get enough sleep last night trying to pull this into a coherent, beautifully shaped narrative that encapsulated everything. But it's a very big topic. So this morning will be a bit more like the news, chunky bits of, you know, there might be the odd bit you like, and it's not going to round out nicely, probably. Anyway, let's pray. Dear God, as we share this morning, we acknowledge and thank you for the presence of your Holy Spirit within, among, and between. So the brief for today was roughly how do we respond to the news, and can we steer a path between being overwhelmed by it, but while still having some ability to remain engaged citizens, so that we don't self-care so much that how do we not be reduced to having a strongly dominant single response like those we described through animal caricatures? Meerkats watching every single scrap of news. You might recognise yourself in one of these. Rabbits or deer in the spotlight, transfixed and paralysed, ostriches with our heads in the sand, or with more complexity, the despondent Eeyore? Or do we run away? And that's just what I associate with humans. I can't think of an animal that does that. So how can we best remain healthy and well and live the unique life each of us has been given the gifts to live, whatever that involves? And if we get that far, ways of being the best us as a community, as the news evolves and the world changes, may also come up, but we might not get that far. I've never watched more news in all my life than this year. We've got a once-in-a-hundred-years event with the pandemic and all sorts of other issues that feel very important to me. It's been tricky not getting tangled up in the content of the particular news and issues of this time when I've been preparing. But I've been given the opportunity to do some wonderfully encouraging reading this week, which I'll share. Needless to say, I'm no spiritual fitness guru, and I'm not a psychologist, and I hope I won't offer any pop psychology. I'll refer to the Bible, to Henri Nouwen, which I read from cover to cover this week, and it'd be much easier if we all just read this book, and some other wise people. I hope to spur thought, not to give definitive. I myself am someone who goes to the letterbox when it's empty, says, "No news is good news," very regularly. I'm a meerkat who became very engrossed in the CNN news last summer while immobilised with skin cancer treatment. And I still watch the terrible and morbidly mesmerising events in the US way too much. And I'm the plump ostrich who in the last months has cooked quite a number of complicated things I'd only ever read about. ask me about them later. It's great that we've got time to reflect on what role news plays in our lives and how we respond to it. I think a lot of people have been reflecting on this in our expanded time lately. News is inherently tough because it's about change and something we didn't know before. Even good news can be a shock and take us time to deal with. We say that news breaks and we have breaking news. Breaking the news is a famous painting in our art gallery. Don't know if... Oh, yeah, we've got a picture of... My very able tech assistant will get the picture up. Just carry on. 3 years after this was painted, it was painted in 1887, it was reproduced in every mining township in Australia because it touched such a chord. A really classic moment. And we saw it in the art gallery just the other day, actually. And this is probably more like the news we think about when we think about the news, shocks. It's not that. That's the three little pigs. doesn't really matter. We're not in control. We already knew that. The wolf.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I'll just keep talking. I've got pages. The news can break our hearts, talking of breaking. And the Bible tells us about many prophets who were not treated well because of their news, various versions of shooting the messenger. Yay! Ah, that's all right.
That one there.
That's great. Oh, there we are.
The struggle with art, isn't it?
Oh, art's about struggle. Breaking the News by John Longstaff in 1887. He actually did it for a painting competition. And it was a very, very familiar thing. I think a month or so afterwards, there was a colossal mine accident in Australia. If you look it up on Wikipedia or somewhere. But anyway, that's how news used to break. And that's a breaking in person news. It's not the stuff that flashes past us very quickly. Whew. Anyway, how do we deal with the news of the wider world? I'd like us to break into just groups of two or three. So if you could just turn to people nearby you and just share for a bit about how you're feeling about the news. When Tim asked this morning what I was talking about and I said the news, he said, that's a shame, I'm on a news fast. I think that might not be the only expression of that idea. Anyway, if you could please share with each other how you're responding and how you're dealing with the news at the moment, how you do deal with it, what you do, how you feel, and then I'll ask a few of you to feed back to me if that would be all right. So just for about 5 minutes. I think we might come back together now if you could just round it down a bit. Ding! Okay. Oh, thank you. I've got a wonderful tech person with the roving mic. Just invite a few people to speak about what they talked about, if you have something to share, to get a general reading feeling on how we're coping going with the news. Who loves it and can't get enough?
Well, Lindy and I talked about how we do watch the news and sometimes a couple of bulletins a day. I don't know how much we attributed it to our parents always watching the news or listening to the news when we were kids. One of the things that I do is that every morning I get my cup of tea and sit up in bed and I take my phone and go onto the ABC News site and try and find an item that's not COVID. And a lot of them are not good news, like people being attacked and that, but this morning I found one about a place in Brisbane that restores bikes, like a men's shed, and they restore bikes and sell them cheap to people. And I thought that's a really good piece of news and the kind of news we could do with at the moment, because there's so much bad news getting around.
We were very similar to that, actually. We talked about how we've never watched so much news before. Morning, I'm going to put the TV on while I'm having my cup of tea just to see what's happening. Meerkat, I suppose. And then I have days where I don't want to know anymore.
We haven't really changed. We've just got a pattern of what we want. But I'm aware that very much I filter the news. The commercial channel go for really inflammatory things. I don't think they're commercial. And I tend to prefer something that is in behind the story rather than just the excitable one. But I also think that social media has...
I tend to switch off from watching the television news, apart from the ABC later on. I can't watch commercial. But I find listening to the radio, Radio National, ABC Radio National, especially Philip Adams... a lot of people disagree, but I like listening to Philip Adams and the people that he speaks to and how he fleshes out important issues in life, especially Wednesday night when he interviews with Bruce Shapiro from America. It's good to get a balanced view of what's happening in that country.
I enjoy reading the community newspaper, and there's, you know, lots of good stories in there about help someone with something and someone...
Certainly a news site that Sarah has read, the Good News Network, which actually has onto that in primary school, and she's... so that's just a thought. A new way of looking at the news suggested by Henri Nouwen. He writes, "We're often, and I don't think we are, but bear with me, tempted to explain suffering in terms of the will of God. Not only can this evoke anger and frustration, it is also false. God wants to bring joy, not pain, peace, not war, healing, not suffering. Therefore, instead of declaring anything and everything to be the will of God, we must be willing to ask ourselves, where in the midst of our pains and sufferings can we discern the loving presence of God?" So there's already a sense that there's a strong yearning to discern the loving presence of God. I was trying to get miserable responses from you then, but I can already feel the desire for focusing on what is good. So I'd like us to spend some time just as we sit as a group, sharing if there are times when we've seen God's grace at work in recent times. And I suppose I mean on the big world stage, but I also mean in the COVID shutdown in Australia, closer to home, God's grace. I mean, Leonard Cohen said it in that wonderful song that the crack, the imperfection, the moment of displacement is when God's grace shows through. So, and Henri, my new friend, talks about displacement as a thing where we're jolted out of the normal. So, you know, our ordinary experience of that is if we're travelling and we're thrown on the kindness of strangers because we've lost things or things go wrong, then you encounter real goodness because you're out of your standard, ordinary, don't even have to think about it life. We're more alert to goodness. So anything came to mind about where we've seen God's grace in... I know that's a tough thing to spring on you. I can never think about that sort of answer on a Sunday morning.
Although it's come out of tragedy, I actually think the Black Lives Matter movement that has gone global, that suddenly now more people are willing to focus on the injustice that there has been based on race. And out of one of the discussions, I am a news junkie, so I will confess, but on the drum, I think they there was a clip from Gloria Steinem quoting the guiding principles of that, of the people who started the movement years before it actually became the big global thing that it is this year. But the it was two women, and they have their four guiding principles that shape the Black Lives Matter movement. I think it's so encouraging for all of us. Lead with love, high impact, low ego, and move at the speed of trust. And I found that actually forms the spirit of which we can make a change and difference.
I have been impressed by the way of people are communicating now during this COVID, with all the doom and gloom, and yet people seem to be communicating a lot more. You can stop and speak to people on the train and they will talk to you back, and you will start a conversation. People you have no knowledge and no, you don't know them. But I'm just very impressed with the way people are sharing more and assisting people.
Just talking about the Black Lives Matter thing, one thing that those of us who are old enough to remember, what you would see is a huge number of and a few other people, but the demonstrations this time, there have been so many.
Okay, thank you. That's called Problems with Taking in the World News. So this is another section, this disjointed thing. And I think it is good to focus on one thing now, and it's about being pelted with the news and a challenge that we all have. One of the most tragic events of our time is that we know more than ever before about the pain and sufferings of the world, yet are less and less able to respond to them. Radio, television, newspapers, and now social media allow us to follow from day to day, from hour to hour, what is happening in the world. We hear about terrorism, armed conflicts and wars, assassinations, earthquakes, droughts and floods, famines and epidemics, concentration camps and torture chambers, and countless other forms of human suffering close to home or far away. Not only do we hear about them, but we are daily presented with. The news seems to have become almost a ceaseless litany of human suffering. The question is, do these highly sophisticated forms of communication and this increasing amount of information lead to deeper solidarity and greater compassion? It is very doubtful. Can we really expect a compassionate response from the millions of people who read the newspaper during breakfast, listen to the radio on the way to work, and watch TV after returning home tired from their work? Can we reasonably expect compassion from the many isolated individuals who are constantly being reminded in the privacy of their homes or cars of the vast extent of human suffering? There seems to be a general assumption that it is good for people to be exposed to the pain and suffering of the world. Not only do newspapers and news broadcasts seem to act on this assumption, but also most organisations whose main concern is to help suffering people. We might ask whether mass communication directed to millions of people who experience themselves as small, insignificant, powerless individuals does not in fact do more harm than good. When there is no community that can mediate between world needs and personal responses, the burden of the world can only be a crushing burden. When the pains of the world are presented to people who are already overwhelmed by problems in their small circle of family or friends, how can we hope for a creative response? What we can expect is the opposite of compassion, numbness and anger. Okay, that's what it feels like to me. Why is that? We are local and physical beings, even with all our communication. And we're able to take in a local amount of news. Living local means and being in a body. I'm just going to read you a bit from my favourite leadership book, even though I've never led anything. We are not designed to conduct the emotional currents produced by living in the midst of huge social networks. We're all designed to live in small bands under fairly stable conditions. It is entirely natural, therefore, to feel overwhelmed or hunkered down. Indeed, no matter how perfect your upbringing and the software your parents, culture and community may have given you, you need ongoing practices to compensate for your vulnerabilities. That's tricky when we look at the Bible. We do live in different times from Jesus because we have the technology to know everything, but we still live in physical bodies. The news may be reported dispassionately now instead of by somebody running up to us crying, but our reactions are still human ones. Whilst we also deal with abstract knowledge and facts, so I have a great abstract interest in what's happening to meaning in language at the moment. That's abstract. The human response to the news is what we're talking about here, the gut-wrenching feeling that we're... Now, you may wonder where the two readings come into this, about Jesus being born and Jesus taking the fishermen on their mission. It's that the good news of the Bible is very much about physical presence, about being there. And the good news actually brings us even closer than what might be our default view of looking outwards or upwards. God came to be with us in the flesh, not distant, not as a rescuer we cry up to rescue us from our troubles, but as a fellow suffering servant. So the name Emmanuel, God with us here. The other reading that I loved is that Jesus said that the good news is that the kingdom of heaven is very nearby, at hand, not far away. I left in the next bit of Jesus, so he says this is the good news, this is a big announcement, and he just keeps wandering along. I don't know if he was barefooted or not, I don't think it says, but just keeps walking along the shore, seeing the blokes doing their fishing, and gathering them up. It's an ordinary day, and he's living in the body, and he's with people, and he's walking with people. It's not the angels on the roof with the LED lights. So ordinary and special at the same time. Not special like the bursts on the news, but somehow ordinary because we can't take them in. Thelma, would you like to speak in terms of ways of seeing the news and the ordinary and the not ordinary?
Rose and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and being on the Speaker's Roster Group, we talked about today's service and who would be great to lead it. And Any Ordinary Day is a book that's written by Lee Sales. Now, I'm not spruiking her or... I read this some time ago and we talked about it. I talked about it with Rose and she said, would you like to say something about it? So I've just got a few little things. And the reason why I also heard... I read this and then 2 or 3 weeks ago I heard Richard Feidler in his Conversations program talk to Lee Sales about this, why she wrote the book and where it's come from. And so for those of you who may think, oh, I know her name, but who is she? She heads up 7:30 on the ABC on weeknights. And so she has been a journalist for the ABC and she's been US correspondent at one point in the past and so on. And she wrote this book because she said on any ordinary day, things can change cataclysmically and, you know, dramatically, and life is never the same again. And she starts off with saying, you know, Philip Hughes padded up every day, he went out to play cricket. He put on his pads and he went out to play cricket. And not once did he or his parents think, this is a dangerous game, you shouldn't be playing it, you could lose your life. However, he was, you know, hit in the head with the ball and he lost his life. And Katrina Dawson went down to the Lint Cafe to have a hot chocolate and didn't leave there alive. And so she's asking questions in this book. She's saying, you know, it feels as if the universe cheated them by not warning them that day. They got up that day, they left home, it was any ordinary day, and out they went, and they didn't go home. And she's saying, is it fate, luck, God, happenstance? What is it that, whatever you call it, people's lives change, and how do we cope with them? She had a near-death experience herself. She was pregnant with her second child at 37 weeks, and she didn't feel well. She woke up on any ordinary day, didn't feel well, and decided to go to the hospital, which was a good move because they said there's this mass in there, we can't see your organs properly, we might just... She was 37 weeks, we might give you a caesarean and take the baby out now and just see what this is. The doctor went to scrub up, and in that time the nurse said, I can't feel a heartbeat, hit the emergency button. She's wheeled off to surgery. Her uterus ruptured, which meant if she'd been at home, she and the baby would have died. And so that sent her into a spiral of, I'm out of control, I've got no control over my life, and so on. Now, she says, although her intellect didn't understand it, her subconscious was saying to her, you're out of control, you don't have any control of your life, anything could happen to you at any time. And that caused her quite a bit of concern and distress. Because she'd been on the 730 report and a journalist, she'd met lots of people who, and interviewed lots of people that had had these things happen to them out of the blue. So she decided to go and speak to some of them, and she does say it's been quite a privilege for her to be able to access some of the people. And because they had built up some sort of relationship with her as a journalist, then they welcomed her in. And she talks about, she went and spoke to people. She went to Louisa Hope. Now, Louisa Hope was in the Lint Cafe, and so she is a woman who has faith in God. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when she was in 2004, and she's in her 50s now. She's in a wheel. She was a woman in the wheelchair. And so Lee Sales was saying to her, how is it that you've already got multiple MS, you've already in a wheelchair, your life, you've already been hit with a big thing. Did you feel when you were in that cafe saying to God, hang on, I'm a Christian, I've got faith in you, I shouldn't get another whammy. You know, what's going on here? Did you feel cheated? And she said, no, actually, because of the things that had happened to me, I felt that God was with me right through that. And the fact, she said, I knew that if I was going to die then, she said, I was actually at peace at that point, thinking, okay, I have God with me. She also said, I felt that I wasn't going to be one, I wasn't going to die. I wasn't panicky or scared about, I didn't feel it was happening to me or was going to happen to me. And she said she felt that she did have shrapnel wounds and have to go to hospital for a long time. And she said one of the things that helped to get through hospital, the boredom of being in hospital, the boredom of not being able to move, was the fact that with MS, through this so often where she couldn't do things and she had to learn to be patient. And she said it helped her, but her faith in God helped her at that time. And Lee Sales went and spoke to Walter Mikak, whose wife and two children were killed at Port Arthur. And he said he didn't have faith in God at that point, but one thing that shone for him was the fact that other people steered him towards... He didn't know what to do or where to go with his life. So they put him in touch with other people who'd lost family members through the Dunblane in Scotland, the Pan Am blowing up and so on. And he said that helped him tremendously, other people going through the same thing. And one thing that struck me with what he said was people avoided him. So people in the community that knew this had happened to him avoided contact, avoided him. And I wonder if that's also something that we do, because we don't... He said they didn't know what to say, and he said, just say hello, how are you? So I found that really helpful, because it is easy to avoid that, because we don't want to bring... We actually think by not saying things to people, we're protecting them, when in fact it isolated... He said it isolated him. So I found that really helpful. It actually helped me 2 weeks ago, because I went to see my sister whose son died last year suddenly. She's older. So when you've got someone older than you, they're always in charge. They're the boss and you're the younger sibling. So I had to go and say to her, you need help. And I can't do it. So it was really good because we were able to cry and carry on and acknowledge a lot of stuff. But I think I just knew there are not many people who could say to her, you need help, because she's always saying, I'm fine, I'm okay. So I thought this book was really helpful from a lot of things and unexpected things. So he said he started the Elena and Madeline Foundation to help others to keep their name, you know, alive, but also to help those that have been through things. She spoke to a minister who came out to, he was the vice chancellor of Sydney Uni, Christian couple, he and his wife, five children. And not long after they were here, a few years after they were here, his wife was diagnosed with cancer and she died. And she just said, I and God are one. So I really think Lee did a great job in that she didn't jam people who had the same beliefs as her, which is, I don't have any faith in God. She openly says she has no faith in God. But this book has got such a cross of people that she's interviewed. Stuart Diver, you know, whose wife died, you know, in the Thredbo disaster, and he survived. He had survivor's guilt for a long time. He met someone else and married and had a four-year-old daughter at the time when his second wife was diagnosed with breast cancer and died. And she said to him, what keeps you going? He said, my daughter. She's got a life to live and I want her to live it in the full. So not everyone does have faith in God, but I feel as if God is in the midst of us and brings people. And Lee Sales said what a lot of people came up with is kindness, the kindness of strangers, the kindness of also those who we know. So don't be afraid to be kind to us, to one another, just, you know, because sometimes we hold back a bit, I think, because we don't want to overstep the mark. And a lot of the people said, overstep the mark, be kind, reach out, because God is working in us even if we don't know it. So it's actually an easy read, and if anyone wants to borrow it, you're most welcome.
What a great picture of God is. God is with us, and so, and as we hold the bigger things, the world things, being together in community is the place where we can hold the big things and the joys in a single place rather than have to deal with others is better. And live in solidarity, not a. Now I've got a section called How to Cope with the News. I think how to cope with the news is the same as how to live, which is why this is such a big topic. However, I found a psalm that said turn off the TV, so I thought you might be interested in that. This is Psalm 34. So this is, I'll just read you the first bit. I will extol the Lord at times. His praise will always be on my lips. I will glory in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. So what are we to look at? Glorify the Lord with me. That's about focusing on good. We know that injunction from Philippians. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. We're not making God bigger. We're giving him a bigger place in our focus and we're looking for him in our lives. So that's, it's not the Monty Python sketch, oh God, you're so big. It's not that. So that's the beginning. Where should we look? Look to what is good. We should spend our time looking on what is good. A little further down. Whoever of you loves life and desires to see many good days, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from telling lies. What we're not to do. Peter Oliver and Paul Mellenk have both said this about magnifying what duds some people may appear to be to us. We're not to abuse them. We're to pray for them. Turn from evil. This is a bit about turning off the TV. Turn from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. Now, turn from evil, I take for myself as meaning don't spend your whole time looking at it. Might just mean, but the response is not to do nothing, it's to do good. Okay, so move to action from the deer in the spotlight. Seek peace and pursue. Now, there's lots and lots of other references to that sort of thing, to be engaged, fully engaged in the hurly-burly present like he is. But I'll just take you to the end of Psalm. Evil will slay the wicked. Okay, so don't have to worry about those wickeds, because the wickeds will get the wickeds. It's not us to come up with the perfect counter argument to some silly argument someone else might have put. Keep your focus on glorifying God. I've also come across an excellent example of process in response to news, and it's the shepherds when Jesus was born. The angels came into the field and said, ta-da! And the shepherds were terrified. And that's the honest response, and I think that's part of the process we have to go through. We all have an honest response, and there's no getting away from that. Once you've gone through that, you can move on to the next bit. So what did they do? They went and looked for themselves after they were told the news. And then their next step was to spread the news. So they did something. Now, Peter Oliver's written something fabulous about this, about how much we can actually deal with and what matters. So I'll just read that to you. Whenever we watch the news, we ask ourselves, is this the truth? The answer is we don't know, and that's what the shepherds said to themselves. This is important because we don't know is the truth, and it's all right to say we don't know. It's very good and healthy to say we don't know. How important is it to know the truth about a particular news item? Here's a quick test to help us decide. If we, by some means, are able to know the absolute truth about a news item, how much difference would knowing this truth make to the way we live our lives today or tomorrow? If the answer is none at all, or even not very much, then the topic is probably not that important for us, not worth spending a lot of time on, and certainly not worth getting upset or angry about. Now, this is very complex, and I can see puzzled faces, but I think to bring this into a personal experience of the news, what to do. If you see something on the news that you really want to find out about that really matters, you should move on that and let the rest go, if that's what you need to do. If you need to do something, the first recommended thing to do, well, one thing you can do is pray. That's to take you and the matter, it's to take the matter into your innermost self before God. And it's to transform you. It's not to transform God's mind on something. It's to say, this matters enough that I will bring it to God. And it leads to a different way of seeing. Now, we're told to pray for our enemies. Now, I'd just like to take you through me thinking about praying about Donald Trump, who is quite a focus of mine. What happens? Well, if I think I'm going to pray for Donald Trump, I think, oh, right, who is he? He's someone who got through pretty big job interviews to do a job that he's ended up in that's too hard for him. I've done that. People are watching him getting things wrong. When people watch you get things wrong, that's pretty. People have said he's vain. Okay, tick, I'm vain. He lets his personal feelings flow into his work too much and his personal interests. Tick. He's jealous of his popular colleagues. I'm Trump. He's my brother. You know, if we really seriously pray for... And I've got similar fluffy hair too. And it turns orange in the sun. That's trivial. Sort of. If we pray for people, we know they're our brothers and sisters, and that matters a lot because we're called to love. Now, there's a fabulous, fabulous clip I have that Phil...
Don't you worry about it.
This is from one of my CNN programs. This is Anderson Cooper, 360, talking to Cornel West, who's a professor of philosophy at Harvard School of Divinity, and he is terrific and very uplifting. How to respond to difficult things in love. It's not Phil's fault. I'm partly showing you this because it makes a lot of good points, but it's just also because I love the lightness with which... In the spirit of the end of the meaning of life, I'll just give you the short list of how to cope. It's one day at a time. It's not worrying about the future, because most of those worries are a waste of time, because the future... It's being fully present where we are, which is written in various places. Being present with others and showing compassion. And to really fill in, my Eastern Wisdom desk calendar has a saying that I cut out a few years ago saying, if you want to be happy, be compassionate. If you want to, others to be happy. Might have to pass on Cornel West. I'll send you all the link to watch at home for your own delight. So I think that actually summarised the other thing that Peter, which was not to take sides, which the news encourages us to do, because we're called to respond in love to others. I'll just finish. Oh, there's one. Okay, so the place that we haven't gone is how might we respond as a community. I think it's in solidarity with each other and in solidarity with our brothers and sisters, who are the same people as our neighbours, who are the people that we come alongside all the time. There may be something we want to think about, ways of sharing the load of the news together by talking about it, by talking about things that don't gel neatly into a narrative. We might want to think about doing something regularly like that, or we might just want a break from the news. on a Sunday, and to focus on God. I've had a couple of beautiful things just come through the email this week that were great messages about... Just read you one of them. This was from the AMEB about how they're running exams and washing hands and things in between. But it concluded like this. Finally, continue to look after yourselves and look after each other. The ongoing uncertainty of how long this is all going to last, plus concern about a potential second wave in WA, is dampening the spirits. All we can do is live day by day, keep following the rules and just go with the flow. Ah, that was such a great surprise at the end of a very administrative email. And we had a message from the Reverend Linda at Sarah's school in the school newsletter. As the world, this is just the end of it. As the world experiences the assault of the COVID-19 virus on people's lives, this may be for us a very prolonged encounter in liminal space. And she describes liminal space as times where the spiritual world seems to meet the physical world, and that when we encounter them, we walk away from the experience as changed people. Christianity affirms God's ability to bring new life, love and hope to places of hopelessness. I encourage us all to look for signs of the sacred and holy in our everyday experiences and to consider, as individuals, a Perth College community and as a society, how we can work with God to bring hope and life where it is least. Okay, so Cornel West doesn't get the last laugh, but if you watch him at home, you'll love him. Thank you. That's the end of this news bulletin. He's coming. Oh, there we go. We'll finish with him. The first couple of moments are a bit irrelevant, but hang in.
We've gone past 11 o'clock, if I read the play school clock correctly. We do have a song, but do we want to have another song? Yeah, seeing some nods, some shakes. Thank you, everyone, for your part in today. Especially thank you, Rose, for that rather complicated thing you were pulling together. That's quite a piece of work. Yeah, I'm sure it'll generate lots of conversations. Thanks, everyone. Let's have a cup of coffee.